Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. It's great to be with you. Today, I am joined by a fellow television producer. If you have Outdoor Channel, you might have seen his show. It's called Man Eats Wild. And I met him at SHOT Show, actually. He was walking around with Pedro and got a chance to meet. Pretty cool guy. He's from Australia. He has a background in the culinary industry as a restaurateur. And now he lives in the States and produces an adventure hunting TV show with a kind of secondary theme of cooking wild game. And it's a pretty cool show. So he also has a pretty good Instagram following if you want to check him out there at Man Eats Wild TV. And hope you guys enjoy this episode. Do want to mention real quick, I'm recording this on Friday, March 7th. As of yesterday, March 6, 2025, I just released my first new hunt film of the year. It's an Oregon over-the-counter black bear hunt. Went out and hunted with my good friends Josh Panzica and Luke Dusenberry. We filled our tag on two bears. This is the first episode that's out now, although stay tuned because by the time you listen to this, both episodes are probably out. And the first episode is my buddy Josh. We're doing some scouting and looking for bears. And then my buddy Josh, we actually find a sow that he fills his tag on. And we found out later it's a 37-year-old black bear. And I could not believe that when we found that out. But he actually sent a tooth in to the state of Oregon. And they confirmed 37-year-old bear. And the oldest recorded black bear ever recorded in the wild was 39. So this is like literally one of the oldest bears like ever recorded in the wild. So really, really cool animal, very cool episode and very cool hunt. Go to my YouTube channel, search my name, Hunter McWaters, or The Hunter's Quest. And you can watch that episode. It's pretty cool. Doing a little bit different style with these hunts this year, a little bit longer episodes, more behind the scenes stuff, more interaction with my guests, more cooking and kind of camp stuff. Not a ton, still moves along pretty good and is interesting, but a little extra stuff for you guys that like that kind of thing. So go to my YouTube channel, please subscribe if you can while you're there. It's very helpful and going to be a lot more really cool hunt films rolling out. So go over there, check that out. As always, follow on Instagram at The Hunter's Quest. Leave me a written review of this podcast and Apple Podcast, and please share the show, share the YouTube channel, share everything with friends and family. That is the best way to get the word out. I really appreciate y'all's support. Would not be able to do this without you. So thank you. I hope you'll stick around and support what I'm doing. You like what I'm doing. So thanks a lot, guys, and we will see you on the next one. All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters, and I am today with, I believe, my first Aussie guest, Mario Kalpo. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it. A lot of people mess up my second name, but
yeah,
you got it. And I'm very privileged that if I'm the first Aussie, look
I think
out.
You are.
Because you're gonna get rampaged now. People are gonna be like, "Why do you know I should be on there? I'm Australian." You should get Adam Greentree. He's a good guy.
Oh yeah, actually, yeah. If you know him, maybe you could. I think the only way I knew to message him was like just Instagram, and I'm sure he gets like millions of those. So yeah. And like now the way it is, like a lot of them don't even come through. So yeah, I'd love to have him on sometime. But
he's proper. I mean, I'm Australian, but when he talks, mate, it's proper yeah. Australian. Like he's got a serious Aussie accent. I got so many funny clips of Cameron and him bow hunting and like literally Cameron will say like, "What did you say, man? Like I don't understand what the fuck you just said." It's like, yeah. Is that even English?
Yeah, man. Well, that's cool. So we were talking off air, and I was talking to my buddy Joe Edlington, who I'm going to go hunt with in New Zealand in a couple weeks. And I was realizing that I've always wanted to go to Australia. Like, just growing up, I was always obsessed with nature. And, like, I was always obsessed with, like, reptiles. And it just seemed like Australia was, like, the mecca for, like, reptiles. So like, and Steve Irwin was literally like my hero growing up. But anyway, I realized that when I go, I get like an 8 hour layover in Sydney. Not that that's like, I wish I could stay longer, but that will be the last continent that I like. That will be the sixth continent. The only other place I will have not been will be Antarctica at that point. So pretty excited about it.
Yeah, man. Well, there's good hunting in Australia. It's different. It's not the same. It's definitely a different place compared to, a lot of the mountain hunts. And it's arid, it's dry, in places, and it's just the animals are different. Obviously there's a lot of crazy things that can kill you there, which we all know about. But once you hunt in Australia, I don't think there's anywhere in the world that's really like it, comparable. Like it's
Yeah.
just the Northern Territory is a special place where, a lot of the guys do the water buffalo hunts, and the pigs there are, in my opinion, some of the biggest pigs, most aggressive pigs in the world.
Yeah.
If you're a pig hunter, you should definitely check out the outback. And then
I know
there's
there's a
great.
lot of invasive species and stuff too. Are there big native, like, ungulates or deer or anything?
Yeah, there's heaps. So the north and east coast of Australia, you can hunt chital, or what you guys call axis here.
Cool.
There's Moluccan Roosa, there in the warmer climates. Obviously, those animals originated from, tropical areas. And then the further south you go, southeast, you get to, fallow deer and red stag. The red stag's nothing like the ones you find in New Zealand,
Yeah,
genetics-wise.
but those have got to be brought in, right? Those weren't like in Australia,
Yeah,
right?
all those deers were brought in. Yeah,
Okay,
yeah.
do you have any like actually native deer?
I don't actually think so.
Yeah.
I no, I'd say no. I'm, fact check me, but I'm 99% sure that Australia, didn't have. These are all things brought over by the English in
Yeah.
settlements and stuff like that. I know that water buffalo definitely is not. And then the pigs wouldn't have been there. Just really, all the nasty shit is a native, so like crocodiles and all that sort
Eastern
of stuff.
Browns.
Don't get bitten by one of those. You'll be right in Sydney, mate. There's not a
Nah.
lot of animals there.
Oh, that's cool, man. Well, anyway, yeah, so I do wanna I wanna like talk a little bit about some of that stuff later, like hunting in Australia and stuff, but I wanna hear a little bit about like what it was like growing up over there, man, and kind of your the younger part of your life. I know you had spent a lot of time in the culinary world and the restaurant industry and stuff like that. So, which is interesting to me as well. So I'd love to hear about kind of your early days and what it was like growing up over there.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. So, I had like two sides of my upbringing, which really, ended up focusing on food one way or another. I guess the first part of it was, my family background is farming.
Okay.
So I was kind of like, my grandpa came over here, fled the war, World War II, and
Where
had
is it,
started.
Italian?
We're Greek, actually.
Greek,
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah. So he had a very crazy upbringing. A lot of his family were killed in the war, and he fled. I believe only him and one other brother survived, and he had quite a few brothers. Farming roots, big hunt, like loved, shooting and hunting, so that's where I grew up, on the land there. And then through the farming, is where I sort of, started, connecting with food on the ground level. Excuse the pun, but kind of like we're just around it all, that country lifestyle. And
Yeah.
then later on in my life, my other grandpa on my mum's side was a world famous chef, like a really high-end chef, for a big hotel group. So I grew up with him. My parents split up, so I ended up growing up with him. So I was really around food, on that farm level, and then on a high-end culinary side from like the age of four, five,
Oh, okay.
six. So, and I guess my first introduction to, shooting and hunting and being was on the farm. So yeah, it just sort of grew from there. But I started leaning into the food stuff, in my early 20s. And then, you know, did some restaurants, worked as a consulting sort of guy, and just even as a consumer, man, eating out all the time. And Sydney's got a really, really good food scene. And now, Hannah, it's all about, I've sort of done a bit of a, you know, taken on a different approach is, you know, through hunting and conservation and understanding, you know, this where everyone's health is at the moment. It's just the importance of feeding people the right food, right?
Yeah.
And that's why hunting's awesome. And you know, being able to attain your own food in the wild is pretty much the purest form of, you know, nutrition, in my opinion. You know, it's you're getting away from all that processed shit that we're being fed. And just the process of going out and getting your own food is healthy. You know, it's healthy for the
100%.
mind. You know what I mean? Like, you know what it's like when you're up in the mountain, you bring the fresh air and you're on this massive adventure, and that's good for you, man. That's good for your brain. So yeah, that's where I'm really leaning into. This year's gonna be a huge year for us in that side of things, is it's like teaching people about the right kind of food, obtaining the food from the wild. If you can't do that, buying organically. And that's really my, as far as culinary is concerned, that's where my new focus is. So yeah, it's been fun.
Nice, man. So digging in a little deeper there. So what did hunting look like to you as a young person? Like, what was hunting like for you?
I guess for me, it started off like, you know, nothing to do with food, really. It was just having fun.
Course,
I
yeah.
didn't know anything about, I wasn't like, you know, we were just. So I remember the first time I shot a gun, I was probably like five, I reckon. And it was this little break open slug gun, you know, with like those, is that what we call them in the States? Slug guns, right? Or
I would call a slug gun like a
an air
shotgun
gun.
that shoots slugs. Do you mean
Oh, okay.
like a 22 maybe, or
Not even those. They're like little metal caps, and you put them
oh
in, and
yeah, cap gun. Yeah.
cap gun, right?
Like, it
So
doesn't
we
shoot an
just
actual projectile, it just makes a noise, right?
no. It shoots a projectile.
Okay.
It's like a metal little tiny thing. You break it open, and it shoots like a metal little cap. I think they're even an
Okay,
air
like a BB gun or
force.
an air rifle or whatever.
Yeah. You could kill a rabbit with it, right? So,
Okay,
yeah.
gotcha.
You know, we used to shoot cans with this thing when I was super young. You know, then I got my first 22, and we were shooting rabbits and birds, and it just evolved from there, and was like just something that we did. But I guess, you know, it then evolved to food when I started, you know, I got to the age where I started cooking stuff around the campfire, and then it just became a full-on life obsession where, you know,
Is
it's
this something
just
your
what.
dad introduced you to, or
Yeah,
granddad,
definitely.
or?
Well, actually, my grandpa and then my dad, and I took it to another level. Like they kind of, I wouldn't say they hunt on the same sort of frequency as I do,
Sure.
but for them, it was just like life. It was a
Not many
necessity.
people hunt on the same frequency as you and I do, brother.
Yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting that. But yeah,
But
it's.
I guess when did you branch out into like big game and stuff? What was your first experience with that?
I reckon I was like, when I say like the 15,
Okay.
14, 15, like when that's when I started like going out on missions by myself, right? Completely alone. You know what I mean?
What were you going after?
A lot of deer in the
Yeah.
like New South Wales. I think the first big animal I shot was like a big pig. I was in the western areas of Sydney, and then, you know, from there, we went to deer, and then, you know, going overseas, and, you know, it just became what I did. But I do remember the first pig I shot, actually. It was crazy, man. It was like, yeah, you know that feeling. It's just like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did this.
Yeah. Like, what? It's like, yeah, a weird mix of like you're happy, but like, what did I just do? Yeah. So, like, is it for Australians, is it like America where there's public land and you can just like get a license and a gun and go out and hunt? Or is it like very restricted, like Europe, or what's it like?
Yeah, no, it's completely different. The gun laws in Australia are very strict. I'd say, you know, one of the strictest in the world. So if you are going to the extent of getting a rifle, you are really interested in the sport because,
Yeah.
like, you know what I mean? It's not like you can just grab your dad's rifle and go down, you know, in back in the day it was, but now it's not. So yeah, just from the gun laws, you gotta apply to per each rifle you want to purchase, you have to apply to purchase it. They get back to you like a month later and say, okay, you can get it. And then to get that, you have to obtain a gun license, which is like a rigorous, I think it's like a 2 or 3 day test, which involves practical,
Jeez.
showing you can operate the gun, and then like a 10, 15 page theory, where, if you get one answer wrong, you're out. And then the
Good
cops
Lord.
come and check. They come and check your safe once a year. And if like one thing's out of line, like if the bolt is in the gun, they'll take your license. So you can't have a bolt inside a weapon at all times, even when you're traveling in the house, whatever. They
Oh
have
my
to be
God.
separated. Yeah, it's crazy, dude. And like they have to be separated, locked in a separate container.
Wow.
It's insane. So, which goes to, I mean, it does say a lot about those people that do hunt in Australia, because they're really, keen.
Yeah.
But there is public land. Not all of it you can hunt on. Some of it's, protected, and then other parts of it are not. If you own private land, you can pretty much hunt on that. But it's, there's a lot, there's a few deer species and a whole bunch of, invasive stuff. So there's no tags in Australia like
Yeah.
America, and New Zealand's the same,
Right.
which, if you get after it, you can get a lot of experience quickly. I mean, I learned my hunting skills went way like through the roof in the 6 or 7 years that I lived in New Zealand, because I could shoot a deer every day, right?
Yeah.
Whereas here, I've got to apply for a tag, I've got to get preference points, I've got to do it. And even if you bust your ass off here, what do you shoot 4 or 5 deer in a year, or whatever it is, like
Well,
that's
you
a
can move down to the south and you can go buy six whitetail tags at a time. It's a little
yeah.
different. Oh yeah, in
Oh yeah.
Virginia, I can go buy six deer tags, and then if I run out, I can just go buy more.
Really? I did
Yeah.
not know that. At some
It's just
stage, which
because
place am
mule
I?
deer are like very more fragile than
Yeah.
whitetail, and there's a
Yeah.
lot more whitetail. So yeah, most of the country, especially in the southeast, south, yeah, you can pretty much have at the whitetails,
That's awesome.
but anyway, man. So you're getting into that. When or what was it? I guess, did you go straight into a career in culinary arts, or did you do the guiding thing first and then end up in food?
No. I got into restaurants. I was in hospitality, got into the restaurant game. Did that for a long period of,
What was it
probably.
that drew you into that, to that world?
I just didn't know what else I really wanted to do at the time, to be honest. And
Kind
that
of the
was one
family business sort of deal?
family business, not actually family business, but
Right.
more like what my background and what I knew. And I enjoyed entertaining people, and I enjoyed that whole experience as a consumer before anything. And then just decided to just get into it, and did that for quite a number of years, and I got a bit. It's funny. The quickest way to destroy your passion is probably to do it as a career, right? But thankfully not for what we're doing right now, but in the hospitality game for sure, it's like,
Yeah.
I was like, okay, owning restaurants and eating nice food is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
So,
That's a
it's
tough
better to be,
business, man.
it's a tough business. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're better being on the other side of the table for sure.
Yeah, so did you go to culinary school and stuff, or
I
what did
did
you
some
actually
courses.
do in
No, I
there?
did. Yeah, I did some courses, did some culinary courses, and then a lot of it I learned on the job, which is amazing. What blew me away is, you look at all these really famous chefs, and 90% of them learn in the kitchen,
For
which is
sure.
the best way to learn. It'd be like reading a hunting book, right? I could teach. If you read the book that's got every trick in the book about hunting, you are still gonna suck when you go out and stalk your first deer, because you've got to know. And it's a feeling. You know what it's like. So the same could be said with food. And I was lucky enough to have all that experience in my family. And then I had like amazing chefs that I used to was immersed with for a long time. So I kind of learned on the job. And that's really where a lot of my experience came.
Yeah, it's the same with me with like production and stuff. Like a lot of the guys I worked with had like film degrees and stuff, and I have a business degree, but I was able to get a job where I learned on the job training, videography, editing, producing, all that stuff. So that's
Yeah.
definitely, if you can get in that situation, that's definitely better in my opinion than paying to learn from a book for sure.
Right. So, do you edit? Could you just ask me about that? So, do you edit all your own content, and how does that work like?
Yeah, the first 2 seasons of the show, I edited, produced the entire thing myself.
Wow.
This year, I am working with a couple friends and some of my videographers to, I'm still in the beginning stages of it, but it's working out pretty good where they'll edit together like a 85%, 80% rough cut.
Yeah.
Send it to me and I'll finish it off.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's good just because it's just producing, editing 10 episodes by yourself every year and planning 7 out-of-state hunts and doing marketing, accounting, business development, set, like everything by yourself is like insane. So that's working out nicely. I am still gonna edit from ground up. At least 2 episodes this season, though, just because I enjoy it and I just
Yeah.
want to tell those stories myself. But I did, I am handing off a good chunk of my editing this year.
Yeah, it's crazy how editing is so important, man. Like, I have
Oh, yeah.
had situations where I've had two people do the same work, or, I get an edit back and I'm like, this sucks. Like, this is
Yeah.
not what the story was. And then it gets edited again completely differently, and it's amazing. And it's just like, it's exactly the same footage, or just put
Yeah.
together differently, and like even just music. Like I'm a huge like I think the audio side of things is just as
No,
critical
audio's
as the,
king, dude.
you know what I mean? Like if you yeah
We
you
were
can
taught that audio is 70% of perceived video quality is from the audio.
I believe it, and you, and the narrative changes, right? Like if I if I put like crazy like hectic music on any footage, you feel like it's a like a hectic scene, and you can put like some really relaxed sort of stuff, and all of a sudden you're falling asleep with the same actual footage.
Yeah.
It's just that. So yeah, it's got it, and it's a detailed game, man. Like yourself, like you're probably like trying to get beats to hit with footage,
Oh yeah.
like.
Dude, I'll spend like 2 minute like 2 or 3 minutes on like just one little like clip like cut of
Beat,
transition.
yeah.
That's like literally a second.
Exactly, and it'll take
Yeah.
you probably half an hour. I mean, whatever. But yeah, people don't realize how much goes into it. Like it's a skill, man. It's a proper,
Yeah.
the right editor can make or break an episode of a show, or make even with like just Instagram reels, for example. It's yeah, it's super important.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, and I have a certain look and like a standard, like, 'cause I come from the TV world, whereas a
Yeah.
lot of guys are, kind of born and bred on YouTube, and it's a little rougher editing production style, which in a lot of times actually does better. Like,
Yeah,
weirdly,
totally.
people
Yeah.
like trust content that's like
Rough.
produced
Yeah.
worse. But
Right.
I
That's
just can't do it,
crazy.
man. I just can't do it. And I decided a long time ago, I'm just gonna do stuff to my standard and eventually and it and I think it may have made growth in some places slower, but in the long term, it's benefited me because quality brands with a quality look and
Right.
that are very careful about like their standard. Those are the ones that are going to work with you, not the ones that just look at how many, viral hits your, reel has that you are, being a clown on there and just sign it 'cause you got like 1 million views or whatever and then dump you a year later. It's like the long-term quality relationships look for long-term quality creators, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're 100% right. It's two totally different worlds. Like, and I'm on yours. I lean more towards what you do, definitely. I've always been TV guy. I'm only just like, man, I got my YouTube channel's, I'm admit it, it's there's nothing there. Like, I don't really even do it. I do TV, and then Instagram is obviously another thing we do. But I look at guys like the Wild Outdoor Boys. Like, the guy's got 15 million
Yeah.
subscribers, and it's like this. "Hey guys, today I'm like I feel like vomiting watching it because it's like, not because it's bad. It's just like it's a guy with an iPhone. It's and it's like chopped up footage just jammed together. But the guy's crushing. Like he's like millions of people are watching this guy just fuck around in the wild. Like not even doing crazy shit. Like he's just I'm starting a fire. I'm building this. I'm, I found a piece of plastic on the ground. And he talks about it for 10 minutes. Like it's insane. So,
And the, you know, those guys have their place, and I mean that's cool too. It's just that's not my thing, and I think it's paid off. 'Cause the other thing is too is like we want to be good representatives for hunting and for conservation and do it in a classy way. And like I know, you know, people who have way bigger followings than me, but they're, you know, they're kind of a joke, and I want to represent hunting and myself, not take myself too seriously, but I don't want to be a clown either, you know?
Yeah, you've got to do it the way that suits you and your personality for sure, man. It's important. But yeah, I just think it's funny that the YouTube world and that style of editing and versus, actually doing a quality story, like where, it's storytelling, it's intricate details in editing, it's putting it together, like it's TV, it's real. It's yeah, you're right. It's two different things completely.
One thing that I started I'm doing this year, I'm experimenting with. So when I first started off, I was editing my pieces for TV and they were, you know, 22 minutes long, crispy, you know, in and out, clean. And then I was trying to like repurpose them for YouTube and but they
Yeah.
don't it doesn't perform as well.
Okay.
What I'm experiencing or what I'm experimenting with this year, which I think is actually pretty cool, is and I'd love people's feedback if you're a listener or watcher. I'm editing my pieces for YouTube and they're like about 30 minutes long. And it's got a little more behind the scenes, a little more cooking, a little
Like
more
rough style or
camp.
just
No, the st they're still like edited well and polished and shot well. It's just that like there might be more of like the interaction between me and my guest or more stuff around camp or more stuff like, you know, cooking around the fire. Just like a little bit more stuff that I think people are interested on YouTube that you don't always have time for in a 22-minute TV episode. 'Cause I like to build the suspense on the stalk and the kill. That's like a third of my episodes on TV. And there's not a whole lot of time to tell the rest of the story. So what I'm doing now is editing for YouTube and they're a little longer, maybe like close to 30 minutes, and then I'm cutting them down and then putting that on TV.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, the reality is the hardcore hunting market is that big compared to what someone like that's watching the wild. I'm just using him as an example because he's, you look at his views, some of them like 100 million views, right? It's insane. It's fucking crazy. I'm not sure if I should be swearing on this, but
Yeah, we
I'm
could
Australian.
maybe watch him a little.
Yeah, I'm Australian, so maybe just beep that out. Part of our DNA. what I was saying, but yeah, the audience is a lot bigger for stuff like that because people like the general public or people that are just not, they would probably watch that rather than a proper bow hunting episode. Our market goes to
For
that.
sure.
So, I don't think it's a bad idea to do that. Add in the cooking, add in the adventure, add in the other stuff, whatever it is. You kind of like
And those
broaden
guys
the.
that are getting those hundreds and millions of views, they're probably making a pretty decent chunk of change just from YouTube revenue, but I don't. So I need sponsorship money to keep doing what I'm doing, and my sponsors want good quality stuff. So it's like
Exactly.
there's that's where the trade-off is for me, but
How much do these guys make? Like, I don't even know, man. Like, if what is the best? Like, do you know the numbers?
I can only extrapolate based on what I make from YouTube, which is like almost negligible.
But
I would say
is it views per, like, there must be a ratio, like, 1 million views, you get X amount of money.
I'm gonna say I'm sure there is, but it all depends on your watch
Yeah.
time. Like views don't really do it, watch time does it.
Right.
I would say, the really big guys could make 100 grand a year, up to maybe 300 grand a year. If
Right.
you're in that like tens of millions type category.
They're saying $2 to $12 per 1,000 views, and
Which
I
is
think
a
you need
huge sweep.
that. And
I
then
mean,
you
two
probably
versus
have that.
12 is a big jump.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess you'd have to have a certain amount before you even get paid. Like
Yeah.
you don't get paid once you hit 1 million views or something.
Yep. I
Or
think you
even.
have to have 10,000 subscribers, maybe, or something before you can get monetized. Something like that.
At 100 million views, I'm just trying to. I just want to. I wish I had the money that Joe Rogan was, because I could have that Jamie guy pull up the facts here.
Yeah.
You
Do you have
know
a
that guy?
team that you work with, a production team?
I got a couple of editors, a few camera guys full time. I got a manager. I've got a small team. And then we outsource a few people. There's probably like seven or eight of us
Wow.
all together, and then maybe have a handful. I've got two TV shows now, so that keeps us busy. And then
What's the other one? I know you
on the
got
social,
Manny's Wild on
it's coming
Outdoor.
out. Yeah, I've got it. I think this is probably the first time I'm ever talking about this to anyone in the public, or because I just got the deal done a few weeks ago. But it's called United Plates of America. It's more of a food show. It's a road show. It's an RV road show. I get this big RV which
Cool.
we get given, and then we do all 50 states of America, hunting, fishing, foraging, the iconic ingredients for that state. And then I end up doing like cooking segments with like celebrities and different musicians and different
Oh, that's cool.
like whatever, just different personalities. But yeah, I take them out into the wild, and we go and catch stuff and cook it, and it's a more of a fun, lighthearted sort of
Nice.
show compared to Man Eats Wild.
Is that on outdoor as well, or?
Yeah, it will be. Well, it'll be on a few networks. They will play it within America, but I will also sell it internationally.
Sure.
So it'll end up being on a whole bunch of networks. But yeah, they'll definitely have it for a good period. They've been just good partners to have.
Guys, I gotta tell you about Canis Athlete Tactical Hunting Apparel. This has gotta be one of the best kept secrets in the industry right now. I'm not even kidding. They're a smaller company. They haven't been around that long, but their gear is literally some of the best I've ever worn. It's top tier. I wore it everywhere this year, from Alaska to Wyoming to Spain, and everywhere in between. I wore it out in the desert, into the Oregon rainforest, and it performs everywhere I've taken it. It's very well designed, very well constructed, and great stuff. So you need to go to canisathlete.com, check it out, try a piece or two, use my code Quest, you'll save some money, and I guarantee you, once you buy that first piece, you're going to want more, because the fit and the function of the stuff is incredible and it's really second to none. So go to canisathlete.com, use that code Quest. And I am confident that once you try it, you won't go back. Guys, whether you are into PRS, or if you're military or law enforcement, or like me, a backcountry hunter, Eberle Stock has got you covered, guys. I use their backpacks for my EDC to carry on the airplanes when I'm going on trips. I use their duffel bags and their roller bags for going to the range and for packing for long trips. I use their backpacks for backcountry missions. I have personally packed out several mule deer, a couple bears, and at least one elk with my main frame, and it's an awesome hunting pack. They carry weight well, they're very durable, and Eberle Stock's always, coming out with new stuff, innovating new products. Everything is modular. You can mix and match different accessories. And I gotta mention, their bino pack also is literally my favorite bino pack I've ever run from any company, and I've tried pretty much all of them. So check out the show notes for this episode, and there's a link that'll take you to their website, but it's a curated list of all my favorite pieces that I use on all my out-of-state hunts, backcountry hunts, everything I do. Or you can just go to eberlestock.com/huntersquest. Guys, if you know me, you know I'm kind of a knife nerd, and I will not go into the backcountry or carry on my EDC anything that is not legit. And I just recently linked up with Half Face Blades, and I am super stoked about it. They make some of the best production and custom blades in the world. Go to halffaceblades.com. They got a bunch of different options for hunting blades on the production side. And then every Saturday at noon Pacific time or 3 p.m. Eastern, they will drop a bunch of custom knives, some of the most beautiful and like well-made knives I've ever seen. And keep your eyes out because I'm working with Half Face Blades on doing a collaboration blade with the Hunter's Quest that you can get pretty soon. So keep your eye out for that. And in the meantime, go to halffaceblades.com. And there's a very good chance that will quickly become your favorite knife. Check them out on Instagram too at Half Face Blades, and you can see what I'm talking about. They are beautiful pieces of craftsmanship. Check them out. Yeah. Well, cool, man. So yeah, going back, I guess, backing up a little bit here. So you like tell me a little more about when you got into the culinary stuff. Like, what did you actually do? Were you a chef? Would you like, what did that whole thing look like? What'd you do?
Yeah, I was more like I'd call myself a restaurateur before anything.
Yeah.
But with that, I mean, it's the word chef's great. I always get weird when I just don't know. Like, there's chefs that I see some people on Instagram. They call themselves chefs, and they're putting a steak on the barbecue. And I'm like, all right, okay, are you chef or
Yeah.
are you the cook? I would call myself a chef. I wouldn't call myself like a. Well, there's different, kinds of chef. There's guys that make things like on a gastronomical level where they'll be
Yeah.
like separating enzymes and making like froth. They're
Yeah.
pretty much scientists, right? So I'm
Right.
not that guy, but I can definitely cook intricate food. I prefer cooking like rustic food. I think. The pe like people are way more inclined to listen and enjoy content when they can relate to it. So that's really where I lean into with my chefing sort of style. And but yeah, I'm definitely a chef. I mean, I've cooked a lot. I've cooked for over 10 or 15 years now, maybe longer actually. 17 years. But yeah, I would call myself a restaurateur chef. But yeah, like I was saying before, these days I'm really leaning into the health and wellness side of food rather than anything is education and teaching people how to cook clean food in a nice way.
Cool. So what was the, I guess, what was the birth of your dream to start TV and go down this route you're going now?
Well, I kind of just fell into it because after I finished up with all the restaurants, I kind of was a bit burnt out and just wanted to get the hell away from all that whole scene. So I moved to New Zealand and I was actually a hunting and fishing guide for quite some time. So I had my own operation in New Zealand where I would take people out on I would guided hunts, guided fishing trips. And then I'd also like teach almost like survival courses where or just teaching people how to harvest food from the wild, how to set up camps, how to start a fire, like really high net worth individuals. And then we would take them out on these crazy, we'd do crazy things like throw them out of helicopters and make them, all that kind of stuff. And that's how I fell into TV because I was at SHOT Show. Looking at products and whatever, and I ran into some folks at the Outdoor Channel, and they were looking at my content on Facebook and Instagram, and he was just like, "Dude, this should be a show." Like, he's like, "Why don't you have your own show? Like, you're an award-winning chef, restaurateur, you can do that side of it really well, and you do all this badass stuff in the wild. that's like super, palatable for an audience. Combine the two together and let's come up with a show. So I kind of did that, and then nothing happened for a while, and then all of a sudden I got a phone call from them saying, "Hey, listen, there's some budget that's come up, and we can probably do something with you guys." And we hit off that first season and did really well. It was like really well received, and we're one of the top five. I think we're like top three shows as far as ratings, and then it just took off from there, and it's been hasn't really stopped. And I'd rather cook for 1 million people on TV than cook for 100 people in a restaurant that are getting drunk and then having to close up at 3 o'clock in the morning every
Yeah.
night.
So you were just a guide and doing stuff on social, and they approached you. You never really were like, "Yeah, I want to have a show" or anything like that.
I mean, he really planted the seed in my head, and then because I had a whole bunch of footage from just filming these adventures that we're doing. We would film it for our customers, right?
Okay.
So like jumping out of helicopters, going on these crazy hunts, like doing all this crazy stuff, and we put film together, and then we sort of went once I spoke to those guys. He's like, "Why don't you just go and put a whole bunch of footage together and make a sizzle for us?" And so I did that, and then that's basically how I started.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely didn't. It wasn't something. Once the idea was in my head, then I focused on it. But it wasn't something that I was like, I didn't move to New Zealand to do that. No way.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you said the show's going well. You got another show in the works. What kind of adventures you got coming up?
This year I've got some good stuff. So I've got in America I've got a mule deer hunt in Kansas. Is it Kansas? No, Nebraska.
Nebraska.
Yeah, I've got a mule deer hunt in
I haven't
Nebraska.
hunted there yet, and I don't know much about it, but it's kind of one of those like sleeper states. Like, not many people talk about Nebraska.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if that's where it actually is. Yeah, and then I've got two elk hunts, one in New Mexico, and then
Oh,
I've got
nice.
another, yeah, I shot a nice bull there last year, actually, same place.
Did you get like a landowner tag down there?
So I work with this company, and I'll plug them right now. Big shout out to Hunt Nation, Fish Nation. So we got a deal where they give us. They organize a whole bunch of hunts. That's kind of why I don't know where I'm doing this mule deer hunt, because they've organized it for me. But they're a great company. They're like an agency that book hunts for people, so they guarantee your tags, and they a lot of the time well, half the time we draw for it, and if I don't get it, then I get the landowner tag.
Yeah.
And so they organize say 80% of my American hunts, and then we do some international stuff too. So that's cool. But yeah, just doing a couple of elk hunts. Got
Where's your other
a
elk hunt? There you got New Mexico and then.
Montana.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so they're both bow hunts. Probably end up going to Africa this year. And then I've got some bird hunting in Argentina.
Cool.
So yeah, there's a bit of stuff going on. I haven't 100% sorted the whole year out, but I've
Yeah.
got probably 5 or 6. This is the time now, really, where we start locking
For
in.
sure.
What about you, man? What do you got going on?
Oh man. So let's see. Yeah, I got New Zealand in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
In
Oh, I've got New Zealand too, by the way, in June.
oh,
So,
okay. Cool.
yeah.
August, I've got in with a really good air transporter up in Alaska, which is hard these days. I booked it like 2 years ago. So me and actually my buddy Casey from Eberly Stock are flying in on like a DIY caribou hunt. September, I'm doing a Utah General muzzleloader deer hunt, assuming I draw, which I should. September. Okay, October. I lined up a pretty cool. This is pretty cool. I'm excited about this one. I grew up waterfowl hunting, and so like me and my dad have like a lot of connections with Ducks Unlimited and stuff. So I A buddy of mine is like a regional, I don't even know what his job title is. He works for Ducks Unlimited on the East Coast here. So I linked up with him and we're going to do a collab episode of Ducks Unlimited where we got a spot in Wyoming. We're going to go shoot like ducks and geese in the morning and in like the evening. And then during the day, we're going to hunt antelope.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. And then,
Like pronghorn
yeah.
and
Yeah. And then, October, or I mean, sorry, November. I just yesterday put in for Montana, non-resident big game combo, which is about a 50% draw. So either I draw that, I'll hunt Montana. If I don't, I'll go out to Oregon and hunt with my buddy Josh, hunt blacktail over the counter. And then
A
December
non-resident, is that a non-resident thing you can do? Yeah.
for which?
The blacktail over the counter.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can just go there over the counter and then you're hunting blacktail. Love that.
And then December, I'm going down to Texas to hunt mule deer, which
Oh,
is
nice.
pretty cool. It's hard to find stuff in Texas, but I was
Yeah.
able to find somewhere that would actually let me hunt DIY.
Oh,
Because
yeah.
like I'm not like against guides, but for me, I don't really like guided hunts. I just like automatically default to just following the dude around and just like doing what he says, and I hate that. I like to figure it out myself. And so if I can, unless I absolutely have to have a guide, which is sometimes, I try to avoid it. So that being said, it's almost impossible to find desert mule deer opportunity that's not guided. I was able to find something, and I don't think it's like world class mega deer or anything, but it's like I can still just go for it and like shoot a deer, so I'm happy. So yeah, that's it. And then I got some ideas for some cool adventures going forward from there, but nothing planned yet. I'm just gonna say it here publicly, so maybe I can speak it into existence. But what I
Yeah.
want to do this time next year is I have some buddies who live in Hawaii, and then maybe with somebody else, not sure, like rent a boat. And just like explore around like different islands in Hawaii, and then like combination of spearfish a little bit, rod and reel fish, and then like jump off the boat somewhere and hunt axis deer. So like a hunt fish
Yeah.
exploration boat trip in Hawaii. That's what I
That
want
sounds
to
epic. I love that kind of stuff. That's
Yeah.
my jam, doing stuff like that, you
Yeah.
know, out of the norm and just going on adventures. So
Mm-hmm.
I did a episode in Greenland that kind of reminds me of what you're talking about, where we're in these boats with these Inuits, or in these little center console kind of things. Well, they just had like, you know, big outboard engines, and it's freaking freezing. Like, it's so cold. And then it's like there's like, I don't know, hundreds of islands, like all these little islands, right? And the caribou swim from island to island.
Yeah.
So it's like, have you heard about this?
Yes. Well, Pedro and Remy Warren did a video series in Greenland where it might have been similar. Like they
It's
were
the
in
same place.
boats. Yeah. Okay.
It's the same exact place. Yeah,
Cool.
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
because
That
I've
looked sick. That was cool looking country.
I spoke to Remy about it, and he's like, yeah, that's where we hunted. It was exactly the same place. So
Nice.
I'll show you, I'll share the details with you. You should definitely go. In fact, I'd even put my hand up to go again if you ever wanted to do that, because it was
Yeah.
so, oh man, it was epic, dude. But yeah, you're on these boats and we're like literally glassing from boats, right? And then you'll see these herds, and so the guy drops you off, and it's DIY. It's not hunt, like it's,
Yeah.
they're pretty cruisy about it. Like, he's there, but he's not like, you
Right.
know. I agree with you with what you said, by the way. I've had, I'm going to put it out there, I've actually had like times where I'm like hating hunts because of guides, where I'm like, dude, like, I just, you know, we all know how to hunt. Like, don't tell
Yeah.
me. I want to know. I just don't. I want to do it my way, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let
I mean,
me.
that's the reason we go out, is to
Right.
explore and to like maybe make a mistake and learn from it, like not, following another
Yeah.
guy around. If you want to do
And there's
that.
more than one way to skin a cat when you're hunting, man. Like,
Yeah.
you can go that way, you can go that way, you can hide here. There's probably
Right.
10 ways to do this right now. So,
And,
you know.
the guy, that's their job. They want to get an animal on the ground as quickly and efficiently as possible, not like have an experience. They want to like kill it and get to the next one.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that, man, because I don't know, it's probably something Have you ever had any bad situation, bad guy, like just had a terrible time or have like a fight with a guy or anything like
I've
that?
literally only done, except for Spain, I've only
Spain.
in America, no, not that's what I'm saying. In Spain it was a great experience. I'm saying except for Spain, I've only done one guided hunt, and that was Audad in
Yeah.
Texas, because they're like incredibly hard to field judge, and they have like a 29 inch minimum where I was at.
Right.
But no,
Yeah,
that
that's another point, actually.
yeah but no that guy, Steve, he was cool. Like, I've hunted with him twice, but I haven't no I haven't really done a whole lot of guided hunts, so I haven't had any bad experiences with it.
I've had to do a lot because of my show being 90% of it overseas, and but in saying that, I think the best way to do it, and this is what I always do, is before I even go out there or book anything, I actually have a chat with the guides one on one, and I say, "Listen, man, here's the deal. I've been hunting for 25 years, mate. I really don't want to be babysat. I understand that, this is land that you have to be careful because people do dumb shit too. Like, I get where they're coming from. People go out and shoot an animal that's not supposed to be shot, or they'll, go in an area and you
Most
don't
people they
know
deal
the
with
lay
are
of the.
idiots, probably.
What's that? Yeah,
I'll
there's
say
literally.
most people they deal with are probably idiots, so I understand they are why they are the way they are.
And that's the chat you got to have. That's the chat I have. I'm saying, I'm not one of those guys, and I'll show you that when we're there. But I also really need to be clear that I just want to be able to do my own thing. Hey, if I do anything out of line or something you're not comfortable with, let me know and I'll dial it back. And you're the boss. But at the same time, like, I really don't want to be sort of babysat. I'd rather just be able to do my own thing. And 90% of the time, they're all good with it. But I've definitely had some guys that I've been like, frustrated
Yeah, that would be
with.
terrible, man. 'Cause
Yeah.
that, the hunting is why we do all the extra work we do, is to be able to go on those things. So it would be terrible to have like a bad experience over there. But yeah, I get it with the international stuff. It's kind of a shame. I get why it's like that, but you can't. There's not a whole lot of places in the world. I mean, that's why, God, America is so amazing, dude. Like, people
Yeah.
don't even realize like how rare and blessed we are, like that we can literally just about anybody, if you long as you hit like a base level of knowledge, you can grab a gun and a tag and go out and have an adventure on public land, and no one's gonna stop you. That is so rare in the world, and
Right.
it's why like I like international hunts, but like I don't have a huge draw to like do Africa and like all these places. And I did a European hunt. Like, I don't have that much draw to it, because you can do so much cool stuff in America.
It's so
But on that
pretty.
note, like, I was curious about Australia. Like, so in New Zealand, I can go with my buddy because he's got a firearms license and he's a local. But I've found that going with a friend versus a paid guide is a very different experience.
Yeah.
In Australia, like, could if I had an Australian buddy, like, could I just go hunting with him, or do I still have to have like a registered guide or something?
I actually don't know the law on that, man. I know New Zealand because I lived there. Yeah, you as long as you're with them, you can fire a firearm and go hunting. I think it's a $25 license that you need to buy. In Australia, I'm gonna say no is the answer to that. I think I'm 90% sure about this actually. If you are operating a firearm in any capacity, you need to have a gun license in Australia. You can't touch a firearm. In fact, I think it's a felony. Like, it's illegal to even have it in your hand. Where New Zealand's definitely more relaxed than Australia, 1,000%. When I was there was no gun registration. Anyone could sell and trade. I could sell you a gun. You could give me a gun. We could both, do that. You can't do that in Australia. But I think maybe under an outfitter, you might be able to do in Australia. That I'd say that's obviously fine because, or do you need to prove that you have an international firearms license or a firearms license in your local country? But I'd say through an outfitter, it's fine. That I'd almost guarantee. But don't know. That's a tricky one, man.
I'll look into it maybe, but
Yeah, if I see you in jail, I'll know why.
that's funny, man. All right, this one might be a little bit tougher question. It might catch you off guard, but what was the hardest day of your life and how'd you get through it?
Oh, the hardest day of my life, man. There's been some hard ones. I don't know, so many things come to mind. I think physical, I think mental, I think emotional, and I'm like, which one of those am I going to pick?
Don't pick physical, that's too easy.
I think when my grandpa died, I was pretty upset about that. That was hard because I grew up with him. He was like a father to me, and I was living here in America. My mom rang me up, and it's never easy when someone close to you passes away, but someone that's special to you is hard. And I think there was a lot of tough things because I wasn't there to support my mother. I mean, I live here in America, right? So Australia is so far away. So being away from, and it's a very hard thing to explain to people that aren't far from their family. But I just felt a little bit guilty about being here and all this grief was happening. And here I am living my dream in America, while on the other side of the world, my closest people are suffering. And someone that I didn't see a lot of for a long time because I was here doing my thing. It was a hard feeling, man, because you get mixed emotions about, or guilt. Like I could have spent more years with him if I was back home. I hadn't seen him properly for 5, 6, 7 years. So yeah, that was tough, man. But then, after a while, it's great. Like that whole grief is funny because it clouds your actual judgment and you don't think clearly because after you come out with all of those emotions, you start thinking, well, wait a minute. These people that love you probably want you to be living your best life and they're actually happy for you to be doing your thing. So, but yeah, that was tough, man. He was, a very, very influential person in my life and just an amazing human being. And it was probably, a lot of people have lost a lot of great people, but for me, it was probably the first time that I'd had to deal with a family death properly. Hey, if I live to know,
Lost for a second.
yeah, good. So yeah, that was probably the hardest day of my life for me, man.
How did you get through it? Just time and just kind of, or anything?
I mean, I was good, man. I was just, it was just it left a bit of an empty feeling for me for a bit, but I wasn't, I'm pretty good with stuff like that. Some people get crushed with things. I'm resilient, man. I'm not someone that sits there and feels sorry for myself. If I want to say without self-proclaiming, I'm a bit of a tough nut. So I'm not like, I'm gonna get back on the horse and continue with life. I'm not gonna sit there and let it destroy me, but yeah, it was more just a moment for a period of time, and that will, I think these kind of moments, people like try to feel better about stuff permanently. That's never going to happen. That there's always going to be a hole in your heart for things like that happen. And that's okay, man. You can have that and still crack on and live your best life and do great things. So, but yeah, I mean, that's I don't think that's an easy thing for anyone to go through. Is loss.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I mean, there's nothing really you can do. It's just keep doing what you're doing. Sitting around moping about it's not gonna help anything, and just you're gonna bear, like you said, you're gonna bear that scar, but yeah, chicks dig scars.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but people go through a lot worse. That's the other thing I
For
always
sure.
think about. When I mean, sometimes I stress about dumb stuff and I'm like, I don't know whether if it's money or stuff and things that are really not that important, man. Like we try to we always think things are way more important than they actually are. But until you've had death or health, for example, like until you have issues of that magnitude, it's all just doesn't matter, does it?
No. Yeah, it's good to keep things in perspective. And so, yeah, man. And you live in Montana now, is that right?
I'm in Florida.
Oh,
Yeah.
Florida. Okay.
I'm in Florida. Well, I think I was when I spoke to you, I was we're trying to buy a house in Montana. That's the
Gotcha.
so yeah, by the end of this year, I'm hoping. We'll have a place in Montana and then a place here in Florida. And just, going back to what you were saying about America being so awesome, you're so right, man. It's where else in the world can you get on an airplane, be in the mountains, living in the most beautiful countryside, and then be on the Caribbean waters fishing and living on the ocean and being on a sandy beach that looks like the Bahamas? Like, that's literally the life that I have at my fingertips. And there's no, I mean, you can't do that in very little places in the world. So we're definitely a blessed country. And I mean, I'm really grateful to have be able to start a life here and enjoy the.
How did you get like to America? Like, they don't just let anybody just become American.
No, so COVID was the catalyst for me. New Zealand, as beautiful as it is, had the shittest. Well, the way they dealt with COVID was just bad. Totally against what I believe in my opinion. And I think all that stuff's sort of coming out now. If most Americans are free people, right? So, and you guys are sort of known as the freest people on the planet. And I love that about this country. Well, it was quite the opposite in New Zealand. We'll lock down. We weren't allowed to do this. And this went on for weeks, man. So, I mean, weeks. It went on for years, actually. But it was so hardcore at the start. And this is a really funny story. I was actually in the States, working out some stuff for my TV show. And when I went to come back home to New Zealand, they changed this law, like literally in that week that I was here, that you had to quarantine for 2 weeks in a hotel room before you were allowed back into the public. Okay, so I'm here in the States, I'm doing this stuff for my TV show, and then I'm ready to go back home. And as I'm booking my ticket, the lady's like, "Are you aware of the new quarantine laws in New Zealand?" I was like, "No." She says, "Well, you got to quarantine, so you have to book that. And there's this website, they give you this number, you go on and try and book it." Anyway, I couldn't book it. It kept like just not working. So I rang them up and she's like, "Well, there's a waiting list now and you can't get into New Zealand until your number is pulled up on the waiting list." And I was like, "How long's the waiting list?" She's like, 19 months.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, I went from going out on a trip to a US for a week to being told I can't get back to my house for 19 months.
That's insane, dude.
And I said, I'm like, "What are you guys talking about?" I'm like, "I've just come to America for a business trip for a week. Now you're telling me I can't get back in for 19 months?"
Like two
She goes,
years.
"It was crazy, dude." So that's how I ended up being here. That's the only reason I'm here right now, because I
So,
couldn't.
did you have to like apply for asylum or something, or what? How did that whole
They
thing
wouldn't
work?
do it. No, there was no excuse on the planet.
No,
I
I
could
mean
have had.
like to stay here. How did you get?
No, I had to leave the country and come. And maybe I shouldn't be telling everyone this, but no, I had to like leave, come back, leave, because on an ESTA visa, you're only allowed 90 days in the country as a tourist. So then. And at the time, I just met my wife. Like, we just met. So I was like, obviously liked her. And I was like, "Fire, what am I going to do?" But it was a blessing in the end because, anyway, I ended up being a gypsy because I couldn't get home. Even 2 years later, I had to sell my house from here. And so essentially, I was trapped.
And so you're
And
married to an American?
now I'm married to another Australian girl.
So are you
Which
still
is
on a tourist visa in America?
no. So because of my what I do, I got a special talent visa. It's called an O1, because I was, in TV and I had award-winning restaurants and blah blah blah. They looked at me as I think it's called a alien with extraordinary ability. So,
That's amazing. An extraordinarily ability alien.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, but now I'm a resident. And my
Sweet.
wife's got a green card, so we're American now.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, this has been interesting, man. There's probably a lot more we could chat about. Maybe we will sometime, but probably good to call it here, but where can folks find your stuff or catch your shows and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so always love some Instagram love. So go give us a follow at Man Eats Wild TV. And then, like I said, our YouTube channel, we sort of just started with it. So there's nothing crazy happening there, but you can check that out at Man Eats Wild. And then, yeah, Man Eats Wild TV show, working on a pretty big network deal there, which I can't talk too much about, but that's going to be on a larger platform soon. And then, United Plates of America coming out in September. So look out for that. But yeah, I appreciate the time, Hunter. It's been awesome.
Yeah,
When we
man.
should definitely work out a hunt and
Yeah.
or some trip to go on.
Yeah, for sure, man. Let's definitely stay in touch and see if we can get something put together. That'd be fun.
Awesome, bro.
All right, dude. Well, thanks again for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
All right.
Let's see you, man.